So I would figure out what mentally would make me sluggish. How do I change these aspects so that way I can start not only just making it to the finish line? That's like goal number one. But then after that, now you want to get your new personal best.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, who hates when people scrape off the frosting on their cake or cupcakes instead of eating it, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 17 of the Running for Real podcast. I am excited that you are here today. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode. You are going to get so much from it. It will be so worth it. All right. So last week, I talked to Paul Sinton Hewitt, who is the founder of Parkrun. If you did miss that one, make sure you go back and check it out, because Parkrun, it's just such a wonderful concept. And regardless of where you come from or whether they offer Parkrun, it's just really great to kind of hear about the running community and just how special it is. I mean, we already know, but you kind of learn a lot more about it. And it's a really feel-good episode. And speaking of feel-good episodes, this one today is definitely going to have you thinking about how you approach yourself. It's going to leave you wanting to make yourself into a happier, more confident person. And I've been wanting to have Bonnie on for a while now. You know, I really believe things happen for a reason. I believe I met Bonnie for a reason. You might remember me talking about it in my California International Race recap. She completely changed my mindset, and I've just loved Bonnie now. As soon as I first heard from her, and we've stayed in touch over the last year, and I really think you're going to get a lot from this one. So without saying too much more, I'm going to let her explain her story. It's an incredible journey. She is so brave with what she overcame, but I'll let her tell it herself. So after a minute from our sponsors, we will be right to the episode. Smoothies, recovery bowl, bars, cookies, biscotti. What do all of those have in common? Any ideas? You can make them with Generation UCAN. How's that for a win-win? Learn more about Generation UCAN at generationucan.com, and I will give you a coupon code later in the episode for 10% off. Bonnie, I am so excited to have you on here. We've talked about this for maybe a year now, but you are finally on the Running For Real podcast. Welcome to the show. I am super excited that you are here.
I am honored and excited as well. I'm glad we finally were able to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been fun. And I wanted like the perfect time to kind of have it go on, because your story is just so powerful. And people who know me well know that you had a huge impact on my, well, I guess it turned out to be my last race. Yeah, that's weird to say. But yeah, my California International Marathon. You and I met in person the day before, thanks to our wonderful friend, Josh Trent, who I have had on my podcast in the past, for those of you listening. And that was amazing for me. You definitely had an impact with what you told me the day before, the way we spoke, and we just sat there for hours chatting, and it was just amazing. But I want to go back to how I first heard of you, which was I was listening to an interview with you and Josh, which happened to be the week before my marathon. And I don't want you to kind of just do the same thing as you did with that episode, because I want to put that in the show notes. I want people to go listen to that, because it's really, really powerful and just a great episode of Wellness Force Radio. So maybe you could kind of tell us just a little snippet or like a summary of like your childhood and what has set you apart from everyone else.
Well, I don't think I could duplicate what was in that interview, because I don't even remember what was in it. I know it was so good. Josh is one of those people that you can just pull such greatness out of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just love, you know, our friendship and being able to connect with that. So, you know, for anyone who's listening, honestly, you know, I have a story just like you do. I think every single person that you meet on the streets has a background, has a history. And what is often hard, though, is to imagine the extent of that person's history. Now, when people see me on the streets, I am blonde hair, blue eyes, I'm well postured, well put together, well dressed. It's very easy to make an assumption that I am, you know, this full package. I got everything that, you know, anybody could desire. She's had a perfect life. She has all of this success. And, you know, it's much harder to see someone like me And to really recognize that it's like, wait a minute, she's had struggles and troubles as well. And so for me, a lot of my story started when I was younger. So in my book, I get to get into the story much deeper. But when I was 5 years old, we lost our real father. My mom and dad got a horrible divorce. And I wish I could say that they were mature about it. But like most people who are going through a divorce, you know, they turn against each other, and then they use the children as a weapon against each other without really recognizing the mental and emotional ramification that that could long term have on a child. So we had to grow up and asking, you know, where did daddy go? And we had to refer to him as Mr. Nobody. So this started to embed in my mind that I'm not lovable, that I'm unworthy. So this is at this point just kind of a seed in my mind. Well, as I get a little bit older, at 8 years old, is where the sexual dysfunction started. And I started being sexually molested by a family member. Now, I wish I could say that this part of the story that I'm going to share right now is unique. However, statistically, 1 in 5 of women, okay, like experience some form of sexual trauma or abuse before you turn 18. So which means like, I mean, every fifth listener that is listening to this right now, Tina, has had some kind of sexual trauma. Mm-hmm. And that then is going to start to affect my mental and emotional ability to what kind of success I have, what kind of, you know, guys I date, what kind of, you know, willingness to be vulnerable, what kind of risk you take. All of these things are going to later be affected by these pivotal moments. Well, the sexual abuse scandal came out when I was about 14 years old. And again, I wish I could say my parents were very mature about it. But there was so much layers of dysfunction that they didn't know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So they truly were trying to do their best. And I often say people do their best, but their best sucks a lot of times. And so they decided to just try to pretend it didn't happen. And so at 14 years old, I get called into an attorney's office. And in there is an attorney, the family member, and my mom and my dad. And all of them are collectively trying to convince me to pretend that this sexual molestation didn't happen, to just sweep it under the rug so I didn't interrupt the family. And so what happens is then, of course, you know, like when you don't prosecute or you don't get help for the person who's the pedophile, what do you think they end up still doing?
Continuing it, yeah.
Yeah. So go figure. I get put back into these situations where now the sexual abuse is getting worse because as I'm maturing, his lust for me is maturing. And so it put me in this really dark space because now about this time of 14, I have all of this dysfunction in my head, right? My dad left because of me. You know, we have this new stepfather, this new family. You don't feel like you fit in. You have all of the sexual trauma. So I feel so worthless and I have all of this emotional turmoil. And I did what every smart 14-year-old girl would do. I look for love in the one place that I could find it. And unfortunately, it happened to be the school coke dealer. And this became my first boyfriend who led me down a really dark place, but taught me how to numb out all this pain. And so I quickly learned that I didn't have to feel. And I very quickly learned that if I just, you know, took that pill or if I just smoked that weed or if I just snorted that coke, then I don't have to deal with any of this stuff. And if you can imagine, that life started to unfold in a darker and darker and darker. And so as I got older, the drugs got heavier, the dysfunction got thicker, the abuse got stronger. And it just really led me down this path of self-destruction for quite a long time until I turned 21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then so tell us about the moment that kind of turned it all around with your father, who you had not spoken to in a very long time.
Yes.
So maybe tell us about that.
Yeah. So by the time I turned 21, I had already, so after graduating barely at 18, I went from state to state like a gypsy. So I jumped from Michigan to Mississippi to Alabama to Ohio, back to Michigan before eventually I found my way out here to California. I always joke, say that 10 times fast. Tongue twister.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine, I was running. I was jumping from state to state. And a part of it was because I had this longing. There's just something inside of me that just was pulling and pulling, and that I knew that I was meant for something more. I knew life had to have something better because I saw other people that didn't have such chaos. And so I thought that if I moved and changed my surroundings, that would magically change my life. Mm-hmm. Well, every state that I went to, what do you think I found, Tina?
The same chaos. And
yeah, because I was still there, right? Because I hadn't I didn't recognize that I was participating at this stage in my suffering. Mm-hmm. And so I would change my situation. And each time I changed it, more chaos, more dysfunction, more abuse would follow, because that's what I believed I deserved. But I didn't know I believed that. I didn't even know that I was creating it and putting myself in situations. So I turned 21 years old. I find my way back to Michigan. At this point, I'm homeless. I'm jobless. I am staying with a friend in literally their closet because they didn't have any room in their house. I was desperately looking for work. It was midwinter. I just escaped a relationship where he blew up my car. So now I had no vehicle because he drained all the oil out because he was trying to get me not to leave, because he warned me if I left that he was going to sabotage me some way. And he did. He blew up my car. And so I tried to find, I tried to find help. Well, I ended up getting in this situation where I accepted a short-term gig to help the person who had sexually violated me my whole life. Now, this is desperation in this moment, yeah. Right? Because who in their right mind would accept like a position? Now, it was supposed to be short term. All I had to do was drive this person from point A to point B. And for a few hours, supposed to be like 6 hours. And that was it. That was all I was supposed to do. Well, of course, this person has another agenda. And so I find myself in this situation, 4 hours stranded in a blizzard in a hotel, fighting this person off of me. So if you can imagine, by this point, now I'm 21, I'm homeless, carless, jobless, miserable, that I am in this place where I'm ready to commit suicide. I'm done. Like, I mean, that worthlessness, the hurt is so big. I don't see the point. I want to get back at all these people. I want them to hurt the way that I'm hurting. And what better revenge than to take my own life? That's going to weigh on them, was the thought at the time. So, in a moment of desperation, I reach out to my real father, who I hadn't connected with. I met him one time when I turned 18. But if you can imagine, I hated him. Mm-hmm. He abandoned me. He left me to all this dysfunction and abuse. Like, I blamed him for that because that's what I was taught to do. My mom said it was your dad's fault. Mm-hmm. He left you. He doesn't love you. He doesn't care. Right. So I have this warped mindset. Well, in a moment of desperation, I reach out to my father at 21 years old, but I panic. Because my belief system is that I'm unworthy of support and help. My belief system says that I'm a burden. And so in this moment of this complete despair, I literally chickened out. I didn't realize that it was 11 o'clock in Michigan. So that's what, 12, 1, 2 in the morning in California time, or 1 in the morning. And I call and I leave this voice message on his answer machine, because I got the answer machine, just talking about the weather, because I just chickened out. And within seconds, he calls me back. Well, this is one of those moments that I truly believe that God has a bigger plan for you, right? This is where fate or faith will intervene. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, 10 years prior to that moment, my real father had went on a spiritual quest because he had lost his children. He was dealing with his own darkness around this. And one day he's on this spiritual quest and the native chief comes running up to him and says, "Hey, I had this vision." And my dad's like, "What is it?" Says, "Well, one day one of your children is going to call and the answer, you have to know that the answer is yes." My dad said, "Great, which kid?" Because he had two. And the chief's like, "I don't know." And he's like, "Well, what's the question?" And my dad's like, "I don't know." He's like, "When is it going to happen?" He's like, "I don't know. Just know the answer is yes." Okay. Can you imagine getting this message from God, right? That says just one day in the future, magically, you just need to say yes, right? So luckily for me, you flash forward to this moment where I'm in despair. I chickened out. I'm asking for help. I'm about to end my life. I have this random phone call talking about the weather. My dad calls me back. And of course, I'm just sticking to the weather. That's all I'm going to talk about is the weather. And luckily for me, in that moment, he knew that this is the time. This is the question. This is the time. And so he says, "Bonnie, I don't like pink elephants in the room. If the answer to your question is already yes, does it make it easier for you to ask?" And what blurted out of my mouth was, "Can I move to California?" And he said, "Yes." 3 days later, I took the $300 that I made from driving the pervert around, bought a one-way ticket to California with the three duffel bags that I had left of my possessions. And I started my personal development journey out here in California.
Mm-hmm. And you have been here since. You are still close to your dad, which is amazing. And, just what you've overcome is just, it's so inspiring and just incredible. And, I have to ask, when you did make this change and you decided you were going to be on this journey, I mean, there must have been points where you kind of were like slipping into old mindset patterns again and kind of thinking it must have been tempting to kind of get back into that old lifestyle again, even though you were in a new place. Like, how did you kind of get through those moments?
A lot of failure. If I'm going to be very honest, I love that I'm talking to a bunch of runners, right? Is that how do you accomplish running a marathon? Do you just wake up one day, decide you're going to do it and do it?
Well, you could do it that way, but it would be a very, very painful way of doing it.
I was going to say, I don't think I could do that. I think something on me would break. So my point is that you get up, you go out and you run. And each day you run a little bit further, or you get a little bit better, or you get a little bit faster. And some days you go out and you had too much salty food the night before and you're really sluggish and your feet feel like cement bricks, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As you're kind of like clugging down the trail. Can you tell I've done some running in my days?
Yep.
Well, this is the same thing as that journey. So it wasn't like one thing that was just like, I didn't wake up one day and say, okay, you know what? I'm healed. Woo. My life is great. Mm-hmm. I have all these magical things. Is that I had to train myself mentally and emotionally how to run marathons. Mm-hmm. And I had to get into this place where I can just, every day I would go out there and run. And then I would realize like what foods that I would eat that would make me sluggish and which ones didn't. So I would figure out what mentally would make me sluggish or what people that I surrounded myself would slow me down. And so it's kind of that same mentality, but in a different way of figuring out, okay, how do I change these aspects? And every day I have to go out there and run and get a little bit better, get a little bit stronger, get a little bit faster. So then that way I can start, you know, not only just making it to the finish line, that's like goal number one, it's just cross the finish line. But then after that, now you want to get your new personal best, right? You want to have personal records. You want to start leading the race. And so you learn skills, you hire coaches, you hire teachers to help you learn how to mentally, emotionally function and run faster and better and more efficiently. And so that's what ultimately led me to the path where I am now. And now, you know, the student became the teacher and now I'm out there teaching people how to run, teaching people mentally, right? Like I'm not a fitness coach, right? But just helping you mentally overcome these blocks and limitations.
Mm-hmm. Nope. And you know, we're going to go on to talk about that in a second, but what were some of the steps or some of the people that you worked with initially to get you turned around? If someone listening is going through some personal struggles themselves and just not really sure where to turn.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you're struggling with. So the first thing I would recommend for anybody, okay, to do is to just sit down and spend some time reflecting and figure out not only what's your problem, okay? Like what is it? Like, are you struggling with consistency? Are you struggling with motivation? Are you struggling with laziness or procrastination? What is it? And recognize that whatever that is, it's a result. That's the result. That's the end thing. Mm-hmm. Well, now we need to reflect inwards and figure out, okay, what do I think, feel, and believe that is contributing to this result? So now that's where we begin to take personal and emotional responsibility by looking inside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And once we can tie in the beliefs, thoughts, and feelings in conjunction with the action, now you can free yourself introvertly, so the extrovert result changes. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, this is why people's New Year's resolutions fail so often, is because we focus on the external thing. You know, we try to resolve, you know, the weight, right? And so what do we do to try to get skinny? Is, well, maybe we sign up for a race, or we join a club, or we get into CrossFit, right? And they have these 90-day challenges. And we do really good for 90 days. But then what happens after that? Right? We go back to the old habits. Well, it's because we didn't do the work to figure out what inside of us needed to change to have lasting transformation. Mm-hmm. Another analogy that I like to use is I say that, you know, your mental and emotional well-being is kind of like a mental garden. And if you have been neglecting that garden for years and years and years, what's present in there? A bunch of weeds.
Weeds, yeah.
Yeah, a ton of weeds, right? So you have all of these weeds in your garden. If you went out there and took a weed whacker to it, are you going to get what you want? So we have to recognize that instant gratification, right? When you go out there and you just take a weed whacker to issues, is that you feel good for a second. Your yard looks good for a moment, but it's not going to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. And those weeds are going to grow back stronger and faster. So we have to be willing to do the work to have a clean garden. And then all you have to do is maintenance.
Yep. Love that. So then let's talk about your book, True to Your Core, where you address a lot of this, because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening are thinking, oh, you know, this sounds great, but how exactly? Yeah. So tell us about True to Your Core. What is it about? You know, I have read it. I've bought it for many friends as a little book I think they would like. So maybe tell us about what it is in the summary.
Yeah. So the book is actually designed for anyone to realize why they continue to cycle in their lives, right? So why they continue to have this reoccurring thread or this reoccurring issue that shows up over and over and over again. So for example, it could be the struggle of not feeling that you're enough or feeling insecure to some aspect. If that has came up over and over again in your life, right, where you constantly feel that you don't fit in or that you don't matter, you don't belong, well, that actually is a program that exists in the subconscious. And what happens is that those programs have existed in your mind since your pre-adolescence. So in your childhood, that they accidentally got installed and left unchallenged are now wreaking havoc in your adult life. Mm-hmm. They are driving your decisions and your behaviors and your responses and your reactions. So all of these things that you don't like in your life are actually derived from these beliefs that were programmed in your mind on accident in our childhood. And so what the book is going to do is you actually get to grow up in the life of Bonnie Kelly. So you get to take my experiences, right? All of these personal hardships, but I'm teaching you how these experiences are shaping your mind and how that, what impact they're having in your brain and showing you how that's showing up in your everyday life. And then I'm going to give you a roadmap or a blueprint to teach you how to be able to not only identify, but then to untangle and to replace these things in your own mind as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And, you know, it has been a really powerful book. I've read it and attempted your like exercises, I guess you'd call them, myself, and really
I love
really
that you said
it.
Attempted.
Yeah, well, I did do it. And but I think the first time I did it, I think I was at a different place to where I am now. And I maybe that is part of because I've approached it and started to work on things. But I feel like if I did it now, I would be able to give it a more well-rounded approach. Whereas I feel like before I was going like too specific and trying to address like things that were too dialed in, I guess, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm working on it. And I should actually go back through it now that I've got this like different perspective.
Yeah, you get something very different out of it. You know, mm-hmm. I actually realized I didn't answer your one of your previous questions about, you know, who helped on this journey, like who would you hire? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the books that I recommend a lot often is by the late Dr. Wayne Dyer. Yes. And one of his first books that I read was The Power of Intention. And it was a really, really eye-opening concept for me on this journey. Now, reason why I bring this up is because, you know, when I read that book, like almost 20 years ago, 13 years ago, I'm dating myself too much here. 13 years ago, I read the book. And then I reread it again in the last 2 years. I mean, what I was able to receive out of it was so vastly different mm-hmm. from now because of the new perception, because of the new mindsets, because of where I'm at mentally and emotionally now. It mm-hmm. speaks to me differently. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if you're in a different state of mind, I strongly recommend going back and looking at it from this new perspective because you're going to get out of it something that you need now versus what you needed then.
Yep, absolutely. No, that makes total sense. And I definitely will. So then let's talk about some of the negative core beliefs. You know, that's one of the fundamental parts of the book. Maybe tell us what they are and what most people tend to do to let them rule their lives.
Yeah. So first I want to start with a disclaimer. So everybody who's listening to this knows that what I'm about to talk about really is impacting, is in the subconscious mind. And you don't have to be a neuro genius to really understand the impact that these things are having and how they're going to play out in your life. So I'm going to simplify it really easy for you. Just like I was saying earlier, is that if you can imagine that everything that you do, believe, think, and all of your responses now are kind of like programs on your computer, even on your smartphone. If you're listening to this on your phone or on your computer, you have a bunch of apps or a bunch of programs. Now, they're not all running, right? Mm-hmm. They're all just laying dormant. However, when you decided, okay, I need to type something, you can just click on Microsoft Word and poof, it pops up and that program starts to run. Well, if you can think about your brain as something very similar to your computer or your phone, right, is that you have all of these apps in your head. Okay, there are apps that are how you fold clothes. That's a program, right? Mm-hmm. How to get dressed in the morning. That's a program. How to cook food. That's a program, right? What I mean by a program is that you've had to learn and been conditioned how to behave this way. Mm-hmm. Well, those are those habits, right? This is where we talk often about bad habits, right? If you bite your nails or you smoke or whatever, those are habits that we do under, let's maybe say, stressful situations or overeating, right? Mm-hmm. You're a muncher. or emotional eater, right? That's a habit. And it's what we call, quote unquote, a bad habit, right? Well, that's actually a program, which means that your brain has been conditioned that when I feel this, or when I'm stressed, or when I'm overwhelmed, to activate this program, and this is the behavior that I do. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So we have constructive programs and we have destructive programs, and everybody listening has both. Now, to the extent of that is going to depend on how much work you've done or how much work your parents have done in the personal development world, okay? Meaning that if you come from a good home where your parents are very self-aware, they're huge into growth-minded, you probably don't have that many dysfunctional programs in your subconscious mind. However, if you had family that was dysfunctional or they constantly held this bar that you have to achieve perfection, right? Then you're probably feel that you never measure up and that you're a failure. You can't do anything right. And you're constantly falling short because you don't meet their expectations. So I'm not good enough. So those programs, those destructive ones, work the same way as the constructive ones on your brain. However, they get triggered and activated more often. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, right, if I need to learn to fold my clothes, that's very specific program to a specific thing. I don't think about it unless I need to do my laundry. But how many opportunities do you think you have to perceive that you're not good enough on a day-to-day basis? Right?
Yeah.
So now that's why that program gets activated more often. But what happens then is that once it gets installed in your mind, and again, it gets installed in your childhood. So one of the beliefs that got installed in my mind when I was younger was that I'm stupid. Now that one actually came from when I was 13 years old. I got kicked out of high school band. I mean, like, seriously, Tina, who gets kicked out of band, right? Like, I didn't even think you get graded in band. This girl right here. And what happened was that I wasn't practicing. I was constantly in last chair. So if anybody knows what that means, and you're a band geek too, if you were in last chair, means that I was always the loser every week during the competition. I was always losing. I was last. And one day, in a moment of frustration, my teacher says in an outburst, "You're never going to get it. I don't know why you continue to try. It would be better for everyone if you went down to the counselor's office and quit now."
So bad.
Right? I know. Now, I'm not dogging on him. Honestly, what probably happened is the guy had a lot of pressure. They were making cuts and we had to perform, right? And he just had a moment of weakness, right? Mm-hmm. We all are guilty. But the result of that is that it was in front of our entire band, right? And I mean, band was a huge thing in eighth grade, right? Everybody was in it. So everyone's laughing at my failure as I'm picking up, grabbing my stuff and leaving and bawling and crying. So in that moment, that experience planted a seed in my mind that says, "You're stupid." Now I'm in eighth grade. I haven't even started high school. How many opportunities do you think that I'm going to have in high school to validate that perception of myself?
A lot. Yeah.
Right? I barely survived high school, okay? Like, a lot, right? So now what happens is, like, this belief is distorting the way that I see and interpret and perceive reality. And so as I'm going into high school, my brain is asking, is this true or not? Are you stupid or not? And as soon as I flunked out of Spanish and French, right? Validation. As soon as I didn't make the cheer squad, validation. As soon as I started getting into drugs and getting kicked out of my house, validation. As soon as every bad decision I made validated this belief that I'm stupid. So now this belief as a child is gaining strength and momentum, and it's locking itself in my subconscious mind as truth. And what's crazy, it becomes so true. This is where the title comes. It becomes true to my core that I know, like I know, like I know that I'm stupid. I know it. You can't convince me otherwise. And so what happens is these negative core beliefs then go left unchallenged during that time frame. And because where do we get the training? Nowhere. Like, I mean, nobody's there to teach us. Mm-hmm. So it gets lurks in the subconscious and it begins to play out in all of my decisions. So now I'm less willing to take risk because of the fear of being stupid. I'm not willing to speak up or to speak in public, which is what I do for a living now, right? I wasn't willing to write because I was so afraid of being judged and being stupid. So now this insecurity that got installed in my mind because of a really pissed off eighth grade teacher, right, is shaping my decisions as adults and wreaking havoc in my life.
Mm-hmm. So then in that situation, someone listening and thinking, okay, I can kind of see some similarities here, you know, I don't maybe know the exact moment that this happened to me or that I thought this way, but I can definitely see something. What would be the next step for them?
Well, the very, very next step is that you have to be able to untangle that story. So what you have to do is you have to kind of like go back into your lineage, your timeline of your life. And if this is what I mean, like reflection, if you, and even if you're out for a run listening to this, what a great opportunity to really reflect.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I mean, turn off the podcast, maybe not right now, but turn off the podcast, you know, set down the music and just think for those miles that you're out there running and just get in your head for a moment and think about where else in my life do I remember feeling this way? Where else in my life do I remember feeling this way? And you make a list. And as you're going back in history, you're going to start uncovering all the evidence that you have gathered over the years that supports this belief. And then what you're going to want to do is you have to begin to challenge all that evidence to figure out where you unjustly maybe judged yourself, mm-hmm. where your perception might have been distorted, maybe where you've made assumptions, where maybe there's another way you can think about it. And so we begin to loosen the grip around the belief, because what holds that belief in power is the story we tell around it. Mm-hmm. When we can untangle the story, the belief has no power and it's easier to kick the butt.
Yep. And true to your core definitely gives you the kind of skills to be able to do that. So anyone listening, I would recommend it if you know you are recognizing some things Bonnie is talking about here. And then so just from a more general point of view, like if we don't believe in ourselves, if we are having these insecurities, you know, we know that running is very mental, but just for general, our own who we are, why is it so bad that we don't believe in ourselves? What's wrong with relying on other people to kind of say, you're doing great.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love this. You know, there's a statistic that says that 72% of all parents expect teachers to teach self-esteem and 74% of all teachers expect parents to teach self-esteem. So when we have this constant deflection of where we learn to love and appreciate ourselves being placed on other people and no one's there to lead that way, where are our children learning self-worth and self-esteem?
Nowhere.
Media.
Oh, okay.
Keeping up
probably
with the Kardashians.
Not ideal, yes.
So they're learning it from the only place we can is observing. And so if our parents struggle with insecurities and their worthiness issues, then we're going to see that. Or we see these magazines where people are, you know, like they're picture perfect and we don't recognize. Well, now we're starting to, but we didn't recognize that they were, you know, photoshopped and that's not really their arm or that's not really their leg, right? Yeah. Like it's all of that stuff has been modified and we don't see that. So what happens is we constantly have this image of what it is that we're supposed to look like or how we're supposed to be or how we're supposed to act. And we keep falling short of that. And yet we don't recognize that the biggest issue is our perception of what we should be, quote unquote, right? So when we can begin to start appreciating ourselves, then we can be able to love and appreciate the perfectly imperfectness, right? I mean, you're flawed. And beautiful. You're gonna fail. And we embrace that failure with an open mind and open arms, recognizing that that's an opportunity for you to grow. So when you begin to just abuse and to beat yourself, then it's very easy to kind of go down this dark trail and connecting your identity and your worth with things outside of you. So the other part of what you said is that, okay, Bonnie, well, now what if we built our self-worth and esteem up on how other people perceive us? That is so common. Okay. And this is one of this is why we go after the house and the car and the, you know, we want to have the fancy bags and the Prada glasses and the Louis Vuitton purse and the Gucci handbags, right? Like we want all this stuff to show our symbol of success. But why do we want that? Well, because when someone recognizes that, they're like, oh, she must be worthy. Mm-hmm. She must be good enough. So a big part of the issue is that society has taught us to value stuff, to value compliments, to not recognize that you're already perfect and awesome and epic, and to appreciate that aspect of yourself. And when we can stop like looking outside and say, okay, Bonnie, every morning I'm going to wake up and say, how are you epic today? Mm-hmm. How are you awesome today? And finding those ways to say like, you know what? I'm a really dang good listener. Mm-hmm. I'm a really dang good friend. And gosh darn it, I love the crap out of my pets. They are spoiled. So you know what? That makes me worthy today.
I love that. You remind me of saying that, you know, I don't know if you saw, I mean, the girl's got to be like 15 by now, but that little girl with the curly hair that stands in the mirror. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes.
And she's like,
oh my gosh.
I am brave. I am strong. It's kind of like that.
But kudos to her parents.
yeah, got the right idea there. So I think that's really powerful. But do you have a starting point for someone who really struggles with this? You know, they really don't believe in themselves.
All right. So again, I'm going to take you back to the basics. All right. So this is the outward result, right? Is that our worth is dependent on how others feel or say or do, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have to say, okay, what is the insecurity that's attached to that? What am I afraid of? Well, I'm afraid they're going to find out I'm not enough. I'm afraid they're going to find out that I'm not worthy or I'm not capable, or there's a judgment attached to it. Well, I do suck, or I am fat, I am dumb, I am stupid, whatever it is. So you need to look at it and take it a layer deeper to figure out where's the insecurity, where's the inner judgment, what is that? Once you discover that, it's the same process as untangling the negative core belief. We have to find the story around it, okay? Mm-hmm. How long you've been telling the story, why do you believe this to be true, all the evidence that you've carried for years. And then we have to poke holes in that evidence. I say that changing these mental and emotional patterns is like becoming a good attorney. Mm. Like what, honestly, if you have to think about it, what honestly is the job of a really good attorney? Let me see you guess.
Finding the facts in places you might not expect.
Okay. Yeah. Like finding evidence to the contrary. Right. But honestly, a good attorney's job isn't to prove that the other person didn't do it, is just to create enough reasonable doubt so that the jury can't convict. Mm. Well, the same is true with these negative beliefs or these negative, you know, insecurities or self-judgments. If we find the story around it, all we have to do is poke enough holes in it so the mind can't convict that as true anymore. We have to take out the truth, like the true to your core. We have to make it doubtable to your core, right? Like that's what it needs to be. We need to get to this place that we're like, well, am I worthless or is it possible that I'm not worthless, right? So once you get into that place where you're kind of like, well, it's possible that I don't suck as bad as I think I do, right? That's much easier space and place to move from there into knowing you're worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then let's go from there to you talk about like the power questions where we tend to kind of, you know, maybe hear two people talking and they stop talking when you come close and you think, oh, they're talking about me. But, you know, maybe talk about how we make it not about you and make it more empowering that way.
Yeah. Oh, man, your brain is such a magical place, right? Like it is your best ally and it's also your worst enemy if you don't know how to use it. And of course, everybody knows how to use their brain, right? You're listening, you know how to speak. What I mean by that is that if you don't recognize that your brain by default is working against you, it will continue to work against you. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is your brain's primary function is for survival. That's its primary function, right? And so it's going to retain, record, and remember a negative experience over a positive one, 10 to 1. And so what happens is then the brain has got all this negativity in your heart and in your mind, and it's going to hold on to all that negativity, and it's going to be in the forefront of your mind, and it's going to kind of push all the positivity, all the I love and accept myself into the back part of the cabinet. And then it leaves you in this space where you're just kind of like doom and gloom or feeling crappy because that's what your brain is remembering. Mm-hmm. So what we have to recognize is that because that's the way that the brain is working, is that it naturally and by default is going to assume the worst case scenario in almost every incident, right? Mm-hmm. So you deciding to take a new job, right? What is the worst thing that could happen with you taking this new job, right? Where does your mind go?
That you're going to get fired.
Yeah, right? I'm going to lose everything. It's a risk, right? Mm-hmm. What about the first time you go on a date with somebody, right? The first date, what's the worst case scenario? Where does the brain go?
Don't know.
Something I know you haven't dated in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. Something big going wrong and you get salad in your teeth and then have it there all the time.
So me, I'm going to be, my worst case scenario is like they're a creep, right? Mm. They're a creeper, right? So like your brain is just naturally going to assume the worst. So what we have to do is we have to start to learn to reason with our mind. And that actually is the definition of being emotionally intelligent. It's your ability to reason with your thoughts and your mm-hmm. emotions. Mm-hmm. So when you can recognize that your brain, when those people are at work or talking at the water cooler and you walk up and they stop and your brain immediately goes to, they were talking about me. It's to recognize that in that moment, you just made an assumption. And we begin to challenge that assumption and say, okay, wait a minute. What are three other reasons why they stopped talking that has nothing to do with me? Mm-hmm. So Tina, you fill in the blanks. What would be three reasons why these people stopped talking that means nothing to do with you?
Because they'd finished their conversation.
Yep.
But whatever it was. Because it's they are talking about a private matter at home and one of them is having trouble.
Two. Perfect.
And they are discussing something that they are privately scared about and don't know what they're going to do about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Three. There mm-hmm. it is right there. Mm-hmm. And so what we have to recognize is those three things are also just equally as possible as them talking about you.
Yeah.
So we don't want to dismiss the threat. The threat is that they're talking about you, right? That's true. That could be possible. However, here's some other possibilities. And so we begin to reason with ourselves mm-hmm. and then we don't have evidence that is locking in as a conviction, which starts to perpetuate a story that will lead to suffering. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And again, this is another concept that is in the book. So make sure you do read it because, you know, it will really help you to address this even further than we've kind of discussed today. So one more thing I wanted to talk about, because this is Running for Real, you know, everything you've talked about has been very applicable to just what this whole company is about, Running for Real. But you talked about the importance of like your tribe, your friends, having a support network and in becoming who you want to be. So maybe you could discuss about that, because we are building this community of like supportive people. Why is it so important to be around people who are good for you rather than being around people who aren't necessarily helping you along your way?
Yeah. So there's a saying that is, you are the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. I think many people have heard that before. Actually, they say even financially, you're the sum of the five people you hang around with, but mentally, you're limited to the five people you're around as well. So if you're around people who have that mindset, like if you're in this running community that running is hard, where that they believe that, where they constantly, they're not consistent with their runs or showing up with their runs, or they don't challenge themselves, or they're like, oh, just eat, drink another margarita, or just eat that, quit being silly. Right? Where they're not on board with your ambitions and goals, well, then your growth is limited to the sum of those five people you mm-hmm. surround yourself mm-hmm. with. So if you are striving for greatness, like if you're striving for achievement or your personal best in whatever aspect, I mean, if you want to apply it to running, then there you go, right? Apply it there. But you're going to be that a sum of the people around you. So if the people around you aren't like, hey, no, you said you were going to run today. Get out there and run, buddy. Let's go. Let's go. If the people are saying like, hey, did you think about eating this, or don't take that other drink? You have this thing, who are constantly advocating for your goals and ambitions the way that you're advocating for them, that they're holding you accountable to it. Those are the people that you want to surround yourself with. That mm-hmm. is the kind of people that are going to continue to raise you up to push the bar of possibility.
Okay.
Because the sum of all of that is greater than the sum of the naysayers that you might have associated with before. So yeah, the people you're around is extremely important.
So then what about if you are in a situation where, you know, maybe your family is very negative and, you know, you have a lot of maybe some like family friends who are around all the time, but you do have this community online where you can kind of escape, but then you're like, oh, but I'm still spending a lot of time with these other people. Like, what can you do there?
You need to really question, what is the reward of surrounding yourself with those people? So we have to begin to evaluate, you know, because I get legacy, right? Like when we have friendships that are legacy friendships, however, we sometimes outgrow them. But I think what happens in most relationships is that they outgrow you too. But every time you get around, because it's so habitual to behave a certain way, is that you get into this funky, stagnant, you know, like where your old self shows up, their old self shows up, and all of a sudden you have this old self dynamic, right? So I always say start here is that invite them to participate in the new you. So really assess who this newer version of you is, what you really desire from your friendship, and approach them and say, hey, I know that we've been friends for a really long time, you know, and I haven't said anything before, but I've really kind of changed in these areas. And I would love for you to really engage and participate, but I can't continue to do these old ways that we used to do. Would you be willing to support me here? Right? Like, but get them to buy into that. But then even more so is that we have to then say, okay, wait a minute. If they're like, no, this is who I am. Take me who we are. I like the old you better, which is very common. Okay. Is then we have to decide on whether or not that that is a relationship you want to continue to invest in. Mm-hmm. And maybe it is, but maybe you need to limit your time with it and start seeking other people in your community that can support you as well.
Okay. Great. Thank you for clearing that up. All right. We are just going to take a moment to thank our sponsor and we will be back with the Running for Real 4. I may have stopped running, but one of my favorite sponsors still makes its way into my food every day. Generation Youcan. You probably already know I'm a huge fan of Youcan. No, I used it as my sole fuel source in my 236 marathon. And yes, I was a little bit scared I would bonk, but my energy levels felt exactly the same the entire way. I didn't have those ups and downs, the sugar highs and sugar lows that gels gave me. But maybe you're thinking, yeah, Tina likes Youcan, but what is it? Well, Youcan is a carbohydrate source originally created for a little boy named Jonah, who continually had low blood sugar. Years later, Youcan is a favorite amongst many elites, including everyone's favorite, Meb Keplezgi. Youcan is giving Running for Real listeners 10% off using code RUNNINGFORREAL. So check out generationyoucan.com for more about Youcan and learn how it can help you control your blood sugar, fuel your races, and maybe make those bottomless pit stomachs of ours be happy for just a little bit longer post-run. All right, Bonnie, just four more questions for you, starting with unique nutrition tip, maybe something you like to eat that you have enjoyed or something that you've picked up along the way.
Yeah, I am actually right now obsessed with the RW bars. Yeah. RW bars are like, they have like six ingredients in the sixth one is no BS.
Right? Oh, isn't that, is RX, isn't it?
Yeah, RX. Is that what I said? RX
you
bar?
Said RW.
Well, close enough.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, yes, RX bars.
Google RW. Yeah, it's an RX bar. Yes. Thank you. I love those things. I mean, I get the blueberry ones. It's probably my favorite one.
Yes.
But there's just no, I mean, it's super clean. Like there's no soy, no gluten. I mean, and it just gives me 10 grams of protein, but I feel good eating them. So that's probably my favorite nutritional thing right now.
Yeah, those are great. Definitely. And I'll put a link in the show notes to those for anyone who is interested. What about a real moment? I mean, you've been very real with us in this episode, but maybe a moment where you can just kind of share something about yourself.
A real moment. Well, I would say last year would probably be one of a very real eye-opening moment for myself. So if you can imagine, like I've spent now, I mean, over a decade working on myself and now learning how to help other people work on themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I run this amazing business. And at this stage, even in my life, I have built up a big company. I have coaches that work for me. I have a decent sized team. You know, I'm doing really, really well in my life and I'm striving to do better, right? Like I'm trying to step up into a new level. So a very real moment for me was last year where I had to like battle my ego to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Right. Where even at my stage, because there was a point where it's just like, no, I've worked past all this stuff. But the reality is like your old stuff is going to show up. It just might not be as devastating as it was before, but it was showing up because we're trying to take my six-figure income company and devising a plan to go to seven figures in the next 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it was hitting up against my worthiness, my self-esteem, my self-worth. And I was like pretending it wasn't. So a real moment for me was when I finally had this breaking moment and recognizing that I need to ask for help.
Yep. I remember we met up. That was just after you'd decided to get that coach and you were telling me about it. So yeah, that's kind of cool to hear the other side of it, of the lead up to that moment.
Yeah.
What about a high moment in your career and why it meant so much to you?
I think the highlight, one of my big highlights was, I don't know if you know Sean Croxton.
No.
He's a podcaster. He did the Underground Wellness for a really long time, and now he has Sean Croston in the Session, so it's a little bit different. But he was, you know, in the podcast world, he's kind of like a legacy a little bit. I mean, he's got like this huge, huge following behind him. And I got a chance to meet him. I didn't know who he was. Like, I had no idea who he was. And him and I developed this friendship. And so I sent him a copy of my book. And a year later, he read it. And I think a highlight for me was that moment where, and he's very exclusive. Like, he doesn't just interview anybody. Like, you have to have like a certain stature. And the day that he calls and says, "You need to be on my show." And, you know, he put me in the top 25 of best books that he's ever read.
Amazing.
Which is a huge compliment from such a discerning person.
For sure. Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Yeah.
And then finally, what do you tell yourself, like, maybe before you go to do a big presentation? What do you say to yourself before you go on stage? Yeah.
I love that you reference that little girl that stands in the mirror and is like, "You are awesome," right? Because that's literally what I will do. Like, if I'm nervous about a presentation, it's rare for me to get as nervous, but sometimes I'll get the jitters. You know, I mean, I got asked to come speak like as a keynote in front of over 300 engineers. And so if you can know engineers, there's like certain types of personality. If you know me, personality is more of the like, thinks she's funny, fluffy, doesn't take things so serious, where they're like very logical, linear, right? Yeah. So I got a little nervous before I was going up. So one of my things that I'll do is that I will just stand in front of the mirror and I will just have a list of different things that, like, "You are awesome. You deserve to be here. They hired you for a reason. You are a success." Because when you can just, like, you know, Tony Robbins used to run and say, "I am the greatest. I am the greatest. I am the greatest," on his runs, just over and over and over again. And really holding that vision and holding that space. And that's what's going to create greatness in your life.
I love that. And especially as, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, when you and I met, you said to me the day before about being extraordinary. And I don't know if you remember that, but I ended up writing it on my arm. And I kept saying to myself, like, "Extra, extra," like, at parts I was struggling to, like, remind me of that, "Be extraordinary."
Yes.
So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Awesome.
And then finally, I ask my guests to send us a picture of them. I'm sure you've got one of you standing in like a power pose, like something you would do maybe before a presentation. Will you send us one?
Yes, of course I will.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so what about if people want to find out more about you? I will put all the links in the show notes for everything we talk about, all your links to your social and your websites, but maybe tell us a bit more about it.
So if you could, the best place to find us is bonniekelly.me. So that's bonniekelly.me. That's the main website. You can actually find links to the book right there, but you can also find videos. So every week we put out these videos that we call Mind Right Mondays, and they are 10 minute or less personal dev videos that are talking on every topic from the people you surround yourself with to, you know, overcoming self-sabotage, to dealing with, you know, paralyzing fear. So all of those are there. They're free resource under our vlog tab on the website. It's a great place to really kind of get that journey started for yourself.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for your time. This was wonderful. And I know people are going to get so much from it. So I appreciate you, appreciate it, and look forward to following along on your journey to becoming that seven-figure business.
Awesome. Thanks so much and happy running.
Isn't she just wonderful? I think she has so much to offer, and just what she's been able to overcome is just amazing. And, you know, the way that she kind of gives her advice and that book, True to Your Core, well worth a purchase. Like I mentioned in the interview, I have purchased it for a few of my friends because I just found it so powerful. And it just really is helpful for kind of dealing with those insecurities that we all have. And at the end of the day, what Bonnie talked about is really what this Running for Real thing is all about. Just being real with who you are, admitting that you're not perfect, being okay with not being perfect. And I really hope you enjoyed that episode because she's just so fantastic. So I hope you will consider maybe leaving a rating and or a review if you are listening to this and you listen on a regular basis. I really appreciate everyone that's done it so far, and it just continues to help me to get the word out about Running for Real. I put so much time and energy into this, and it would just mean a lot to me. I am still in England right now. My best friend is getting married tomorrow, so I'm very excited about that. And I will be back to regular programming again next week. Not that you've really noticed a difference, but I hope you have enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to hearing from you next week.
thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out tinamuir.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.